Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome again to another edition of Liberty Unbridled. I am your host, Ken Molman, and this is the My View Matters Radio Network. I apologize for having a handful of technical difficulties tonight. Things are acting a little funny here on my end, and I apologize for that. Hopefully, I'm coming through loud and clear. It's it's Labor Day weekend. Apparently, my computer equipment and Blog Talk Radio, or some combination therein, have decided that they deserve the weekend off. I don't know. But we're here, we're live, and if you'd like to call in, the number here is area code 858-683-1326. Again, 858-683-1326. All right, so to get started tonight, as always, we start with the random political rhetoric generator. Tonight's randomly generated political rhetoric is, unlike myself, my opponent wants an America where the military-industrial warmongers and Mexican drug mules can make a mockery of our precious environment. It doesn't have to make sense. Randomly generated political rhetoric. Let's see here. Tonight's random correlation, spurious correlation. The per capita consumption of cheese in the United States correlates with the total revenue generated by golf courses in the United States over the past decade, or for a decade, from 2000 to 2009. Of course, the two really had nothing to do with one another, but whatever, that's the point. It's to show that correlation is not causation, and people should be very wary of that. You know, speaking of causation and correlation, you know, the global warming fight drives me crazy because nobody really talks about the right things on this argument, of course, because it's political and silly. You know, the reality is, can we all agree nobody wants pollution? Let's start there. Nobody wants pollution. Nobody wants to breathe stuff that damages our lungs or otherwise causes health issues. Nobody wants to be breathing the sulfides and the nitrides and the blah, blah, blahs and all that stuff. Nobody wants to breathe that stuff. Likewise, nobody wants to drink that stuff or, for that matter, eat that stuff. So we all agree that pollution is bad. And that's where that argument needs to start, discussion rather, needs to start. But we get caught up in the global warming stuff or climate change, as it were now, because it's called climate change because they can't decide if the Earth is warming or cooling. It's just changing. And I guess I don't really help things, but I have to add a joke in there. Of course the climate changes. It changes four times a year. They're called seasons. Climate change is normal. It's natural. It's not something to be combated. What is to be combated is pollution. What is to be combated is if something is modifying the weather in some sort of grander scale, climate, maybe we do need to look at that. But there's not a lot of evidence, and I know this is where some of my friends get really tore up. There's not a lot of evidence that the man-made stuff is actually causing climate change. Now, there are a lot of models. There's now a lot of data. But the reality is that we are talking about in a minute sample of time. When you consider the age of the planet having roughly 100 years worth of weather data to compile into some sort of climate pattern, and the further you go back in that set of data, the less data there is. It's not even a complete set of data. It's not. I mean, now, I'm not for pollution. But I'm also not for radically altering the lifestyles of every single person on the planet due to outcomes, due to computer models, based on future predictive computer models that are basing their data, their predictions, on incomplete data. The sample size is so small compared to the existence of the planet. Whether you believe the planet has been around for 5,000 years, or if you believe the planet has been around for billions and billions of years, in either case, the sample size is too small. It's not even that it's 100 years, because that's the problem, is that we're still putting up new weather stations and gathering new information. It's not like we've had all these weather stations for the last 100 years. We have not. Incomplete data. And you're trying to make assumptions based on incomplete data. And that's why the computer models are often skewed and wrong, because the data is incomplete. Now, it could very well be the actions of humans does have an effect on the climate of the planet. And I would venture to say that it probably does. But then the question becomes, to what extent is that? Is it a significant effect? If it is insignificant, if it is nothing, does it matter? Is it something where there's such a delicate balance that just a small insignificant change could mess things up? Who knows? But to try to force people to change their lifestyles based on incomplete data is wrong. Again, we know pollution is bad. We don't want pollution. Pollution is bad. Everybody agrees. The reason this ties into the correlations, you'll see, especially those on the climate change side of the argument, that they say, well, just because it's been the coolest weather on record coolest summer on record for whatever period of time doesn't disprove global warming or climate change or whatever they want to say. And at the same time, I see on Facebook today a meme going around about, well, look at this reservoir in California. I mean, geez, 3 years ago there was water there, and this year there's none. Well, okay, that doesn't prove any years across thousands or billions, whichever way you look at it, years. There may have been other things going on that we're not even aware of. Has water consumption increased? Was there a problem? I don't know. But boy, that picture, woo, look at that. Scare tactic. And likewise, I see the story about, well, look here, the polar ice caps have gotten bigger over the past 3 years, despite the predictions that they would get smaller. Well, that's just because those stupid predictions are based on incomplete data. That isn't to say that the polar ice caps aren't going to melt away. That maybe they've, anytime you see this stuff, a trend line, right? If you're looking for a trend, there will be times when, for a short burst of time, things are going against the trend that I make on the whole thing. We don't have enough data to make a decision at all. That doesn't mean we should be trying to do bad things. But it also doesn't mean we should go into super freakout mode either. And the problem is that it's been so politicized that we can't seem to have a rational conversation anymore. And that's what needs to happen. We need a rational conversation about energy policy. We need a rational conversation about global warming or cooling or climate change or whatever we're going to call it this week. We need a rational conversation. And unfortunately, the only part that we're getting is bumper sticker slogans thrown at one another and pictures with a meme on Facebook. The interesting news, there was some interesting news this week that I thought was pretty interesting, is the idea of using hemp to create supercapacitors, basically big old batteries. And I think this is a very interesting story and one that could bode well, potentially, for Kentucky especially. You know, we've talked on the show numerous times about the many uses for hemp. We've talked about how hemp could be used for so many different things that we don't even know. And, of course, the theme here on this show, of course, has always been we should let the market decide all of that, not some government bureaucrat or some elected official up in D.C. decide whether or not hemp is to be used or could survive in a free market scenario. So this is kind of interesting because, you know, they're talking about how now hemp is making a comeback, and it's not just here, it's other states as well. And I'm glad that we're staying at somewhat ahead of the game, which is good. We're at least keeping up with the people leading the charge. There are lots of things that are going to be coming down the pipeline here. There's a lot of change in general. We've talked about that on a lot of different shows. There's change in general coming. And I've checked into this just briefly. I've read a few different stories about it. I've checked with some of my sources on hemp and hemp technologies, and they believe that this could be viable, that this is a legit possibility. I'm excited about that because I'm excited for Kentucky because hemp grows really, really well here. Really, really well. And if we find a way to use hemp as an alternative energy source, a renewable alternative energy source, and one that rather cheap, I would love to see. Nothing more would I love to see than at our agricultural core that is Kentucky get back on its feet. Save the family farms that are left. Actually have a real economic future, a positive economic outlook for the state of Kentucky. I'm cautiously optimistic about him, and we've been over that many times on this show before. Hemp is not the silver bullet. It does not solve all of our problems. I believe it is a piece of the puzzle. How big of a piece remains yet to be seen. Just another example of how hemp could lead or could help lead Kentucky out of the problems that it has. I see we have a couple of callers in the queue that actually want to speak. Hold on. I forgot to mention at the beginning of the show, I do my thing first, and then at the bottom of the hour, we'll do a break, and we'll bring you on after the break. So just hang on there, folks that are in the queue. By the way, speaking of that, if you want to call in and talk about any of this, 858-683-1326. Again, 858-683-1326. And just hang on a few more minutes. We'll go through the break, and we'll talk. All right. Something I wanted to talk about last week, and I don't think I quite got to it, was the militarization of the police. We've had a lot of talk about this after the Ferguson incident, but also other places as well. And I think it's important for people to realize how the militarization of the police actually began. The program began as part of the war on drugs. It's commonly referred to now as the 1033 program. It came from the original National Defense Authorization Act in 1990. I know a lot of people are upset because NDAA, right? This is NDAA, but this is its little brother, the beginning, if you will. It continued to grow and expand in its size and scope, like every government program. And NDAA began arming our police forces for the purposes of fighting an escalating drug war. And the idea was, hey, we have all this surplus military laying around. Why leave it lay around? Let's give it to the police so they can more effectively fight the drug war. Then, as time went on, after 9/11, they expanded the 1033 program to also be for fighting domestic terrorism. And that's really where all of this began, the genesis of the militarization of our police forces began with the war on drugs. And then after 9/11 was expanded and went into overdrive with the threat of terrorism. Now, I'm not trying to downplay the threat of terrorism. I'm not trying to downplay what happened on 9/11, not at all. But the reality is 9/11 was an exception, not the rule. There are countries in the world that do deal with those type of events on a fairly regular basis. We're thankfully not one of them. Now, you could try to say that in part that's because we've militarized the police to the extent we have, but I don't really think that's the case. I don't think the fact that MRAPs are roaming the streets and that the SWAT teams look like a paramilitary force, I don't think that stops crazy people. I guess for me, the lesson that I want folks to understand is that, especially those that support the war on drugs, is to look down the line at what does that lead to. Programs like the war on drugs may be something you believe in. Maybe you really believe the war on drugs is a good idea. But do you think our police forces need to be dressed up and outfitted like the military? Do we need the, as Obama once called them, machines of war in our streets? But we do have them, don't we? And so it's important to remember where these came from. And that's really the lesson here that needs to be pounded home. How did this happen? People, oh my gosh, how did the police end up like this? Oh, the war on drugs. That's how. That's how. And unless you're going to accept that every time you give the government more power, you're giving away your power, and every time you do it, it grows. It never just stops there. There were all these people talking about, well, remember that shootout in California? You're telling me one shootout is the justification for militarizing every police force in the United States? One incident? Going back to our whole discussion about correlation versus causation and scientific method, we call that an anecdote. That's one time something happened. Billions of dollars has been spent on this program. Billions. Giving the police ridiculous vehicles. And make no mistake, it's not just the police that have been beneficiaries of this type of stuff. I mean, the fire departments after 9/11, my gosh. I'm sure if you look at your local fire department, they have all kinds of really cool vehicles now because, boy, were there a lot of grants for that stuff. That I'm against the fire department, not that I want my house to burn down. Please make no mistake on that. But some of the purchases were kind of silly. We've talked on this show before on silly police purchases. They have a mass casualty unit in Campbell and Kenton counties, at least. I don't know if they do in others or not, but we know they do up here. Why? Kenton County has an MRAP. I mean, I know the city streets in Covington are kind of rough and need some serious work, but I don't think we need a mine-resistant armored personnel carrier roaming the streets of Kenton County. That's crazy. I don't know. I just again, remember where this came from. It came from the war on drugs. So, kind of related to this, is the the whole Ferguson situation. What a mess. What a freaking, I don't even know where to begin. I guess there are so many issues, so many concerns, so many things wrong with everything that went on there. The only people who seem to have any common sense at all are the locals. And I don't mean the looters. I mean the locals. The police have acted wrong and overreacted. Governor of the state is adding fuel to the fire. The media is adding fuel to the fire. The police are, you know, arresting the media and locking them up, which adds fuel to the fire. I mean, it's just silliness after silliness after silliness. And the reality is that we don't have all the information, and we still don't. The video that was put out there, oh, look, we have him on video here. We think he was stealing something not long before this. They're not even sure it was him in the video. B, even if it was, I don't think that's why the officer stopped him. I don't think. Again, I don't have all that data. And C, even if it was, why? Stealing a couple of boxes of cheap, generic, terrible-tasting cigars is not punishable by the death penalty. Was the officer's life really in danger? Maybe. I don't know. But, you know, I've talked to officers in the past who have said that one of the key problems in law enforcement is that they do not teach officers how to de-escalate a situation. We've talked about that on the show before. And I really think that that's what's really gone wrong in general. The media has escalated the situation. The police, the whole thing, it started out with the police escalating a situation into a shooting. Then the people of the community escalated. And granted, though, they may have been right to do so. They were upset because someone had been killed. But their actions escalated the situation. Then arresting the protesters escalated the situation. The media escalated the situation. Everybody's escalating the situation. Nobody's talking about, hey, we need to step back a moment, figure out what the heck went wrong here, hold those accountable who are accountable, hold them accountable, and learn from that. That's what's really needed. We're going to take a quick break. I'm going to do the break early tonight because I want to get to, we've got callers in the queue. I got a couple other stories we can get to as well after the break. You are listening to Liberty Unbridled on the My View Matters Radio Network. We'll be back here in just a few minutes. Hold tight.
First impressions aren't the most important thing. They're the only thing. At Ernie's Print Shop, we'll produce what you need to represent your company professionally. Right now, you can get 1,000 full-color business cards, 1,000 4x6 postcards, or a 3x5 banner for just $60. You choose. Check us out at erniesprintshop.com. Ernie's Print Shop, over 50 years, one source, one solution. erniesprintshop.com, 502-969-8585.
They overload my brain. zip through the bush. I can feel the strain as I grab another train. I ain't looking for rain. I'm starting to sink into countless days. They overload my brain, far too much to maintain. Lost in information, overload. They overload my brain, far too much to maintain. Lost in information.
Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springsteen of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email myviewmatters@aol.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.
All right, folks, and we're back. You're listening to Liberty Unbridled here on the My View Matters radio network. And, as promised here, we have a caller in a queue, and it's a special guest, I believe. Here we have, I believe, our Libertarian Senate candidate, Mr. David Patterson. Is this you, sir?
If I'm coming through, it is.
Yes, you're there. How you doing, David?
I'm doing fantastic, Ken. Thank you.
Hey, I don't know, we had talked about trying to do an interview tonight, and I know you were kind of traveling and moving around, and so I didn't even actually announce it to our audience. If you want to do that tonight, we certainly can, or if you just want to chime in on what we've already been talking about, you can do that too. It's up to you.
Well, we can. I actually have a few thoughts and comments on Ferguson, and then if you want to talk about some other stuff, we certainly can.
Well, I mean, hey, they're relevant topic. Let's do it. How about we start with hemp? That'll get us rolling off the bat.
Sounds good. Legalize, legalize, legalize. It's absolutely ridiculous that we are being held back. And when I say we, I mean Kentucky and our economy is being held back because of the notion that if you legalize hemp, it's going to freaking destroy the morality of the state. It's crazy.
Yeah, and in fact, this is something that finally, after many, many decades of fighting, local people here in Kentucky have finally gotten through to some of the elected officials. But just to be clear, right now, the only thing that's legal in Kentucky is research. And that was only predicated on the feds allowing us to do that research. So it's kind of a two-part scenario. So what I'm hearing from you, that you are advocating that from the federal side, which is the office you're running for, you're looking at just opening the doors and saying anybody who wants to do this should be free to do so.
I'm advocating that we treat hemp like we would corn or tobacco or any other crop. I think that the federal government has absolutely no business telling us what we can or cannot do at the state level. And I think that our state lawmakers need to step up and they need to fix this. They need to go to the ring with the federal government on this.
Okay. Well, any other thoughts on hemp? Because I mean, there's really not a whole lot more to say. I mean, you've made your place clear on it.
It is what it is. It's an incredibly huge opportunity on so many levels, and we've let our federal government. In a lot of places, we've let them take over what should be states' rights issues, and it's time we start putting the power where it belongs, which is back in the hands of the people of each state and or commonwealth. It's been far too long, and hemp is a perfect place to start.
All right. Well, like I said, I can't think of anything else to ask on that. And I guess I should mention, if you're up to it, we can go ahead and let other people call in and ask questions too. But the number here is 858-683-1326. 858-683-1326. All right. Well, let's go to Ferguson then. Let's go there.
Okay. Well, I mentioned I was listening before, and I heard some of the comments that you made. And the thing that I would impress upon everyone is to take a step back. This young man may or may not have robbed a store. Whether or not he did that or not has not been proven, and therefore he is innocent until proven guilty. If he's a suspect in a robbery, and keep in mind, folks, you don't have to have a weapon to commit a robbery. In Kentucky, you don't anyway. I don't know what the state laws are in Missouri, but you don't necessarily have to have a weapon to commit a robbery. So, but that being said, he is innocent until proven guilty. Now, let me throw this in there too. The officer that shot him and killed him is innocent until proven guilty. And until the totality of the circumstances of that shooting incident come out, I don't care what was on the TV. We all know that the press likes to put their own swing on things. And until the totality of the circumstances come out, that officer is also innocent until proven guilty. We have a tendency to judge very quickly. And on my Facebook page, I even put, in a situation, especially in any kind of officer-involved shooting situation, I always like to wait until I get as much fact as possible before I make a comment, because the last thing you want to do is say something and have it turn around and, kind of seem silly that you said what you said. So I would still, even at this point, I would encourage everyone to take a step back, take a deep breath, let things work themselves out. And I know that's hard to do with all the police mistrust out there, but you have to remember that, and I'm going to say this, and, people may disagree with me on this, but there's a whole lot more good police officers out there who are doing the job for the right reasons than there are bad ones.
Yeah, and I think, unfortunately, the ones that a lot of times I think, and I've mentioned this to people before, is that it's the negative interactions that stick in your head, right?
Sure.
When it comes to police interactions and that, and as an officer, I'm sure you're aware of this. You know, you might have 100 people that, you know, you have a normal, rational, pleasant interaction with on a daily basis. That one person who, you know, doesn't go well, you know, kind of ruins the other 100, if you will. You know, I've known a number of officers through the years, and I know a lot of officers are trying to do things for the right reasons, and I do think that some of them go a little too far with the hands tied, you know, it's the law thing, but I also think that a lot of folks really, you know, a lot of officers get in to do public service and do have the crazy people, right? And I've known a couple of those, the ones that are in it for the badge and the gun.
But you can say the words. They're sociopath and psychopath. And yes, there are many police officers out there. I think they're in the minority, but there are police officers out there that should not be police officers. There's no doubt about it. To even speak against that thought is, it's an unwinnable argument.
Well, I think that's the problem, right, is that you have those types that do breed the mistrust. You know, something that's – it's kind of a sort of a minor issue, but at the same time, it's one of these weird ones that's really strong out there. You know, there seems to be this thing with police officers shooting dogs, like, a lot.
Right.
I mean, it's not like, you know, it's not even something where the dog tried to bite me and I shot it. It was – the dog was barking and it looked mean, so I shot it.
Right.
You know, and territorial, and they are pack animals, and they're going to protect their turf. And there's no doubt about that. That,
right.
You know, if a dog is on the premise that you have to enter, there is a possibility that will occur. But
right.
I have a concern that it seems like they're a little too quick on the draw, as it were, these days. At least
well,
in some
it,
places.
It may be,
at least maybe it's the media, though, too. Maybe it's just the media over-reporting those incidents.
Well, and I'm not gonna deny you what it may look like, but I will say this again. And don't get me wrong, I'm not taking up for anyone who walks in who goes into a house to arrest somebody on a warrant and shoots a chihuahua. Okay, I am not justifying that any way, shape, or form. What I'm saying is that in each individual circumstance, you have to look at the totality of the circumstances before we can make a judgment on that. And I know I've only shot two dogs in my career. One was a rabid chow that was in a that had made its way inside of a home while the homeowner had walked outside to take his trash out, and was in the same room with two literally 4 or 5 week old babies that were asleep in their bassinets. And the dog was laying at the base of the bassinets. And, you know, I couldn't get a hold of the dog warden at that time. It was in the middle of the night. Or actually, it wasn't in the middle of the night, but it was late at night. And, you know, there was just too much risk there was no choice. You either put the dog down or risk the safety of the children. And so, you have to look at all of these circumstances surrounding the incident in question, and that's just my outlook on that.
Yeah, no, and I think that's the key. Is I think there are times where there are quite rational reasons to do so. It just seems like at least you know, and again, it's easy to publicize and really spread the bad actions around. Or you know, I don't know what the percentages are. But maybe it's 1% of all officer-involved killing of a dog. Maybe it's 1%. Maybe it's less. We're not really justified. But, you know,
that
minority, that super minority of the time makes big waves because, you know, you just killed somebody's dog for no reason.
Right.
I mean, it's kind of a big deal.
And it's a family member. If an officer has to kill somebody's pet, regardless, I mean, you're talking about a family member. I mean, I get that.
Yeah.
I mean, if somebody came into my house and killed my cat, I'd be pretty pissed off about it.
Exactly. I mean, and by the way, in the state of Kentucky, they, in case you were wondering, you can kill a cat pretty much anytime you want to. But that's another story entirely. our laws are weird. Anyway, Let's see here. Now, I guess I'd be remiss if I didn't bring up the latest polls. You know, the latest poll has you down just a tick from where you were, where you had started. You know, if you take the margin of error into account, really nothing has changed in any of the last three polls.
Right.
If you factor the margin of error in. And I guess my question that people are going to want to know is, why should they support you when you have less than 10% support right now?
Oh, wow. Gosh, how much time do we have?
Yeah.
I think what people need to realize about the polls is that you're talking – I don't have it in front of me. Do you have the number of people that were polled on that one, the one that just came out?
Actually, yeah, I do, and it was actually a very small number. That poll in particular, actually, that was one thing I was going to bring up in this, is that this poll only had – it had less than 600 people respond, as I recall seeing the numbers. So that's a really small sample.
Yeah, and so my thought on it is simply this. It's a poll. It is going to give you a rough estimate of where you are. And when you look at the difference between, say, 4, 6, 800 people as opposed to the 1.4 million to 2 million people that will be actually voting in the election, you know, it's a poll. It's a set of numbers. It's a gauge. And to be honest with you, I am absolutely still encouraged at the fact that that there are so many people, because you have to think that this poll was probably either they had already started conducting this poll, or they conducted it or started conducting it shortly after I filed. There are still a whole lot of people out there that are learning who I am. And of course, I don't have millions and millions of dollars to get my name out there so that Kentuckians can sit by and let the TV tell them who I am. So, of course, I'm encouraging people to share my website, where my platform is. I'm encouraging people to share the campaign email so that people can call in or can email me and ask me specific questions. And hopefully the next set of polls – will have enough time will have gone by, and hopefully that number will increase some. But I'm not discouraged at all.
Okay, yeah, I mean, and I'm trying to bring the poll up now. I actually didn't have it queued up here, so for whatever reason, it's driving slow today. But I think it's running really slow. Poor Survey USA, their website is hurt today. The one thing I did notice on the poll was that it was run Monday through Wednesday, which is kind of a weird time to run a poll. Most of the polls I've seen in the past are run, you know, the last part of the week and into the weekend, done so because you hit a lot of different demographics, kind of interesting. And they're not showing me the crosstabs here at all. So I don't exactly know. I haven't seen the crosstabs. I have no idea. But I don't know. I have a I think it's pretty interesting. So anyway, let's see here. You know, you mentioned earlier the press swing on things, and, you know, that's something here that we've talked about on the show quite a bit, something that I deal with and you're now dealing with, is the media just seems to get stuck in a rut and refuses to actually talk to people about things. That you know, they're very little reporting on your campaign, very little reporting, really, McConnell or Grimes, as far as any issues are concerned. We certainly know, you know, that McConnell's campaign manager resigned this week, but we don't really
know.
That
Grimes, and that Grimes evidently may have, of course, once again, totality of the circumstances, may have received an illegal in-kind campaign contribution on her bus. But once again, who cares? Let's talk about the issues. And, then you go into KET, and, you know, it's just absolutely, you know, it's ridiculous that more people, you would think that agencies that are there to inform the public about what's going on in the news, you would think, especially in something as important as politics, that they would be wanting to give the public as much knowledge and information as they can so that they can make informed decisions.
Hey, David, we have a caller on the line. I want to bring him on here real quick. Hang on just a second. I think I know who this is.
Sure.
If it's going to let – there it goes. Daniel Williams, is that you, sir?
Yes, it is, Ken. How you doing?
I'm doing just fine, Daniel. How you doing, sir?
I'm doing well. I'm listening to your show. It's a good one tonight. I did want to call in, if you didn't mind. I wanted to speak to the candidate. I think he's missing the overarching point of Ferguson. That's what alludes to what you spoke to earlier about the militarization of the police. That seems to be an issue that resonates with more than just the internet fringe. It seems to be getting some mainstream play, and I was wondering if he has any information like that on his website. Did you take that position?
David, how
do you want
you,
me to go on?
Where are you on the militarization? Go ahead, yeah.
Well, Daniel, right?
Yes, that's correct.
Hey, Daniel, it's good to meet you.
Nice meeting you.
Listen, I'm not sure that I'm missing the point. I'm simply making one of many when it comes to Ferguson. But the militarization of the police is definitely a huge concern of mine, especially because I am a police officer. You know, our small department at Harrodsburg, we have 16 officers, I think. We have a few that we're getting ready to hire, but you know, we have a Humvee and some big old transport vehicle, and you know, we use them every now and then in parades and things, but you know, we haven't decked them out and or anything like that. What concerns me is that as far as the militarization of the police, what concerns me is police administrators, the people that are in charge, for some reason seem to want to make the police more like the military. They want to treat situations more like the military does in the theater of war. And in my opinion, and I think you and probably everyone else listening would agree with me, that's a really bad idea. It's a really bad idea. I have absolutely no problem with police obtaining surplus from the military as long as it's used appropriately. And the problem that we're seeing is that it's, in my opinion, and once again, I think you all will agree, it's not being used appropriately in many circumstances. I don't know if that answered your question or if I got off topic, but I definitely think it's an issue.
Well, as a senator, how would you address that concern? What practically would you do to reverse the trend of the military hardware going to local police agencies?
I think you know, as a senator, the best thing that I can do, being that I'm going to be in the tertiary majority of Congress, is that I can simply encourage and point out the negative effects, the negative things that can occur, and encourage my fellow senators to either stop voting things like this into existence, or we can continue the way we are, but we need to put limitations on when these items can be used and what they can be used for, or we need to start repealing some of this and get this stuff out of the way.
Well, would you propose legislation that would do what you say, or would you repeal existing legislation? Which would be easier?
I'm a big repeal guy, so repeal would be my first choice. However, if we were able to, and I say we because I've never drafted any legislation before, so I would have some people working with me on it, but if we could draft some legislation that would do essentially what a repeal would do, then, or to put limitations on what those items can be used for, then yes, I would be all for it.
Okay. Well, before I get off, I want to address one more point, which was Ken's earlier point with regards to hemp. Kentucky has a very proud history of producing hemp before it was prohibited. And Kentucky was considered the premier hemp cultivators back before hemp got a dirty name. So there was an interesting story that didn't get a lot of publicity. It was an old story about Kentucky's role, and I would think as a Kentucky senator, that would be another strong issue that you could populate and help to change.
Absolutely, I am 100% pro hemp. There's absolutely, in my opinion, nothing negative that can come from hemp production on a large scale. It's just absolutely would be a fantastic thing. I think it would be a huge bolster, and it would bolster Kentucky's economy big time.
Well, you should dedicate a page or a link on your website detailing the history of Kentucky and hemp and why it should be legalized again and how Kentucky could take the national lead in production. I think that would be an interesting subject and worthy of a position paper.
I agree with you wholeheartedly, Daniel, and I think that's a great idea. I will definitely get with the people that have been helping me build my website and that are maintaining it, and we will. That's a great idea. As a matter of fact, that's an excellent idea on a lot of different topics. If you have some others, if you'd email them to me and let me know, that's a great idea. Put some more tabs on there and have some things that people can read up at their convenience.
Yeah, I think it would be pretty simple just to put position papers on things that matter to Kentuckians and matter to Americans in general. But anyway, it was very nice meeting you and speaking with you. Best of luck in November. And Ken, nice talking to you again, buddy. I'm going to get off and listen to the rest of the show.
Yeah. All right. Thanks, Daniel. Thanks as always, and always good to talk to you, sir. Take it easy. Thank you. Okay, so what was I going to say about hemp? Oh, the thing about hemp, I just wanted to chime in real fast on that too, is that, we've got the biggest excuse or reason why hemp is not just whole, hog re-legalized. And this, I have to laugh. And I the problem is I'm having a hard time keeping a straight face and not laughing, even thinking of it, is, if we let the farmers grow this, then there'll be too much and farmers lose money. So we need to protect the farmers from a crop that's going to bankrupt them.
Right.
And I just have to laugh. It's like, man, farmers aren't stupid. They know what to do. They know what to grow. And the reality is that the first few years you're going to have farmers growing an acre or two. They're not going to be growing tens of thousands of acres of hemp and then be stuck with a whole bunch of hemp. They're going to ease their way into this stuff because they don't know, and nobody knows what the market's going to be. And I apologize. It just, that's my pet peeve with the argument in reverse or on the other side of legalizing hemp is, well, we're actually doing this to protect the farmers from themselves. And gosh, I hate that kind of reasoning anyway. And the idea that farmers are too stupid to know what crops are viable or not is, quite honestly, an affront to all farmers in Kentucky.
Well, I would think it would be a bit insulting to them. Yeah, an affront, a perfect way to put it. Let them make that decision.
So we have about 3 minutes left, David. Is there anything else that you'd like to get out there or anything you'd like to talk about here in the closing minutes?
Really not. The only thing that comes to mind, of course, is my campaign. And it's the biggest thing is, or that I could ask your audience, is to just spread the word. You're not going to see my ads on TV because right now I don't have the money to pay for it. So, this is really, this campaign is going to be a grassroots effort. And if you like what you've heard, or if you like what you've heard but are not convinced, then please contact me. Let me know. Let me know what your concerns are. I have concerns every day. People email me every day, and I get back to as many as I can. the ones that are just that tell me that I'm ridiculous for running, and that, you know, we need to secure the Senate for the Republicans. I ignore those, because, no offense, but, you know, I don't, that doesn't concern me. What concerns me is making sure that we have proper leadership. So if you have a concern, please let me know. Please let me know what your questions are on the issues. And if you're not convinced, do some research. And if you like what you hear and you like what you see, spread the word, because I'm going to need as much help as I can get.
And it's funny you mentioned that. One quick thing that I know, the Democrats have accused you of being a hired hitter by the Republicans, and the Republicans have accused you of being a hired hitter for the Democrats. I think that's really entertaining that both sides are claiming that you're being funded by the other. And,
right.
You know, knowing you personally and knowing a bit of what's going on, nothing could be further from the truth. But,
I know we have to wind it down, but really quick, for anyone out there that can hear this message, listen very carefully. The FEC is very, very, very plain. You have to file if you obtain more than $5,000 in contributions. I have not filed yet, people. I'm not being funded by the Democrats or the Republicans, I promise you, or I would have more money than this.
Yes. David, real quick, give people your website and where they can get a hold of you in the last minute here.
Absolutely. It's www.davidforsenate.com. That's davidforsenate.com. It can be spelled with either the numeric symbol for four or F-O-R. And you can contact, if you have an email, you can contact us at campaign@davidforsenate.com with the numeric four. davidforsenate.com, campaign@davidforsenate.com.
All right, David, thank you for calling in. Folks, we are out of time. Wow, this show went really, really fast. Folks, thank you for tuning in tonight. I apologize for the technical difficulties at the very, very beginning. And David, thank you for calling in. Daniel, thank you for calling in. Folks, that's the end. You all have a good evening. Have a good week. Ow. Music starts really loud. There we go. Technical difficulties, like I said. Folks, thanks for tuning in. Tune in to the other shows on the network throughout the week. We're here Sunday through Thursday, 7 p.m. here on the My View Matters Radio Network to bring you news that matters to you. And until next week, I hope you have a good week and have a happy and safe Labor Day. Take care, everyone.